If you want to be the best, it helps to learn from the best. The same could be said for investing. Author William Green did all the hard work compiling the best of the best over 25 years. He spent many, many, many hours interviewing some of the world's best investors. And he joins us now to talk about his book, Richer, Wiser, Happier, How the World's Greatest Investors Win in Markets and Life. Hello there.
Hi, I'm delighted to be here with you. Thank you for inviting me.
My pleasure. Where did this obsession start with learning about and from the world's greatest investors?
Well, in a strange way, it went back actually to my childhood when I was about 15 and started gambling on horses. And I think I had this fantasy then that there were neat ways to make money without actually getting your hands very dirty. And that didn't work out too well. But then when I guess I was in my early 20s, I discovered the stock market and I thought, this is the real game. And so really it was kind of born of my laziness and indolence that I didn't really want to actually do any serious work. And so I had this fantasy that there were these areas of life where if you just thought better than other people, you could do really well. But I had this kind of unfair advantage, which was that I actually, as a journalist, had the opportunity to interview the greatest investors. And so I started just to interview a lot of them for magazines like Forbes and Fortune and Money and later Time, where I was an editor. And gradually my obsession kind of matured, I guess. And I started to think, oh, well, these guys aren't actually just extraordinary gamblers. They're not just lining their pockets brilliantly without working too hard. They're actually incredible thinkers. Mm. And that I think was when I started to realize, oh, there's something going on here that's actually really interesting, because if you can learn to think better, not only in markets but in life, it's just such an extraordinary advantage.
We know about Warren Buffett. We know about Stephen Schwarzman. What is a lesser known investor that you think we should know about, and what should we know about them?
Well, one of the most fascinating investors I write about, and actually the very first person I arranged to interview and travel with when I started working on this book 5 years ago, is a guy called Monish Pabrai, who basically in about 1994 discovers Buffett and decides that if Buffett could average, I think it was 31% over 45 years, 31% a year, he thought, well, it shouldn't be too hard for me to figure out how to average, say, 26% a year. And so he figured out he had $1 million saved at that point. And he said, okay, so if I play this 30-year game and I can average 26% a year, I can turn $1 million into $1 billion. And so my first chapter is really about how he set about doing that by reverse engineering Buffett and his genius 97-year-old partner, Charlie Munger. And he basically discovers that Buffett and Munger had essentially revealed the laws of investing. And he was stunned to think that not many people, including many professional money managers, were actually bothering to play the game the way the greatest investors of all were playing it. And so that for me becomes a really interesting way to look at what those fundamental laws of investing are and whether we also can replicate the approach of the greatest investors in order to become rich ourselves.
You include a female in this book, which, there's a lot of dudes you talk about, but you do talk about a female named, is it Laura Garrets or Jarrett's?
Yeah, Laura Garrets, who's remarkable. Yeah.
Well, I want to read a quote. You say, in an industry overrun by alpha males, many molded by the same elite business schools, Laura fits none of the stereotypes of her profession. She's a true original who likens her nonlinear investment approach to the unconstrained poetic rhythms of free verse. I want to meet her. She sounds amazing.
She's a really extraordinary person. And she unlike many of the men that you write about in the investment world, she's very humble, very quiet. She's kind of a diminutive, modest Midwesterner. And you look at her and you think, you know, oh, she's nothing. You know, you wouldn't be startled if you met her on the street. And what I came to realize is that she's kind of this warrior. I mean, the strength of mind that it took to come from this kind of rural background where she had no business education, no background. She had relatives who were factory workers and farmers and the like. And to come from that background and become an extraordinarily successful international investor, I think took such iron will, But what's really extraordinary about her also is that she's so international. It's incredible. So she spends maybe 9 months a year traveling. She'll plant herself in other countries. She'll just sort of say, oh, well, let me go live in Turkey for a few weeks or a few months. So there are all of these places where she's basically built a kind of informational advantage just by understanding these international markets way better than anyone else. And she's just a true original and a true intellectual. And so when everyone else was kind of hiding out during COVID, I said to her, so what have you done? And she very typically, she had holed up in a house with a stream and with about 45 books. And so she's just someone who's constantly building this intellectual and informational advantage, which I think is kind of revealing, because one of the great questions for any investor is well, do I have an edge, and what is that edge? And for her, to some degree, it's things like the fact that she speaks fluent Japanese, that she has a home in Kyoto, that she's reading constantly, traveling constantly, and so there's a sort of cumulative intellectual advantage that she has over other investors.
We've talked a lot on this show about gender in investing, and quite often how extraordinary the returns are for female investors versus men based on a bunch of things. Did you go there with her? Did you put the lens of gender on, or did you just say, you know what, it's all through the lens of investment returns and we don't need to go there?
No, we did talk about it, and I talked about it with other well-known female investors that I interviewed, and it's a very complex and an uncomfortable subject, and I don't feel hugely qualified to weigh in on it, but I'll repeat what she said to me, which is she said she has a lot of friends who were extraordinary investors, who were female peers in the industry, who would quit in their 40s because they were sort of sick of chest-thumping macho men who, you know, wanted their names on the covers of magazines. And I think it's very hard. It's an industry that's built on ego in many ways, right? It's there is a chest-thumping aspect to it. And I think it also requires a lot of compromise. She said that in her early days, when she got a job at a very well-known fund company, she said there were just no female role models. And she said it was just clear that nobody had to really explain it to you, that it was clear that you had to get in at 6 a.m., 7 a.m. In the morning and leave at 8 p.m. and you had to work 7 days a week. And so she said if you wanted to have kids, or you wanted to have a balanced life or a balanced family, you saw that there weren't very many role models.
Right.
And at a certain point, she decided if she wanted to compete with all the men in this industry, she couldn't have kids for a while. Mm. And then at a certain point, her husband decided, I'm not sure I want to. And then she said it just kind of got away from us and we didn't have time. And I asked her if that made her sad, that compromise. And she said, yeah, sometimes. But she said, I love my job. It's an intellectually thrilling job. And so I think the issue is just not an easy one. It's not simple, and there are structural problems in the industry. There are personal issues. There are ego issues, and as my son would say, it's above my pay grade.
Right. So your title is Richer, Wiser, Happier. I think it would seem to be quite easy to find richer and wiser together, but are the world's greatest investors actually happier?
I think they can give us really interesting clues as to what it takes to build a happy life. And one of the questions that I look at in the epilogue of the book, for example, is what does the money actually do for you? And I think they're an interesting group of people to ask about what money does for you, because in some ways they've hit the absolute jackpot, right? They have everything you could possibly dream of, you know, the yachts and the planes and all of that nonsense, which for many of them actually does turn out to be nonsense. And I think what was striking to me was that I think there are two great things that you get from the money. And the first, maybe more than that, but the first, I think, is that they're able to live in alignment with who they are in often in all of their peculiarity. I mean, they can set up their lives in a way so that they don't have to do any of the stuff they don't want to do. And I think that's a very powerful gift. And the second thing I would say pretty consistently is the ones I saw who were happiest are the ones who share the money. in extraordinary ways. And so Monish Pabrai, the person I spoke about earlier, who decided that he was just going to reverse engineer Buffett, his game is basically to make $1 billion and then to give it away. And so he's already educated thousands of kids across India who are very high IQ kids from extremely poor families. And he set up this charity that that identifies these extraordinarily talented kids and gives them 2 years of free education to get them into the Indian equivalent of MIT. And so he's literally helped to lift thousands of families out of poverty. And so when I see someone like that, Monish, in a way, is a good example of someone who lives deeply in alignment with who he is. He's perfectly prepared to turn away millions of dollars of a year in fees so that he doesn't have to do stuff that he doesn't want to do. And at the same time gives away money in a way that I think is very fulfilling and satisfying and life enriching for him.
Well, this has been a fulfilling conversation, William. Thank you for joining us for it.
Thank you. It's been a delight chatting with you.
William Green is the author of Richer, Wiser, Happier, How the World's Greatest Investors Win in Markets and in Life. I don't say this a lot, but it's a really well-written book. There's a lot of not great books written about investing and investors. This one's really good. So you should find it and read it.